Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Lynn Wilson. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology, specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Wilson is a professor of therapeutic radiology, and he's an expert in the use of radiation to treat lung cancers and cutaneous lymphomas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, we're pleased to welcome Dr. Peter Glaser. Dr. Glaser is Robert E. Hunter Professor of Therapeutic Radiology, Professor of Genetics, and Chair of the Department of Therapeutic Radiology at Yale School of Medicine. And he joins us this evening to talk about DNA repair. Here's Lynn Wilson.
Let's start off by having you tell us a little bit about what DNA repair is.
Well, DNA repair is the process in a cell by which the cell tries to fix damage that occurs to its genes and chromosomes. DNA repair actually occurs through several different pathways in response to various different kinds of DNA damage. One of the most common types of DNA damage is what people experience when they go to the beach and get sunlight damage to their DNA. And that's why sunscreens are recommended. But the fact of the matter is that the DNA does get damaged by the ultraviolet light in the sun, and our cells' DNA repair enzymes need to come in and fix that. Other ways you can have DNA damage are from chemicals such as from smoking or from diesel fumes. Even some of the compounds that we eat lead to reactive chemicals in the body that cause damage to DNA. And then other sources, such as radiation, can lead to breaks in the DNA that need to be repaired.
And what sort of effects can chemotherapy have on cells? Does that interact with DNA as well?
Many of the chemotherapy agents that are used and that are effective have as their targets the DNA in the cancer cells. One of the most powerful chemotherapy agents is something called cisplatinum. And this agent acts by creating platinum addicts on the bases in the DNA and blocking the function of the genes.
Tell us a little bit about what it is that you do within the Department of Therapeutic Radiology.
So as you mentioned, I'm chairman of the department, and so I have a fair amount of administrative duties, which mostly consist of trying to keep everybody else happy so they can do their jobs. But I also do a fair amount of basic science laboratory research focused on cancer biology, as well as some clinical care of patients receiving radiation treatments.
And what first got you interested in studying genes and cancer?
Well, I was in college in the mid-70s when there was the beginning of the molecular biology revolution. I took a course in genetics, which opened my eyes to the possibilities of the power of genetics and how that could be used to solve or address problems like cancer.
Talk to our listeners about how DNA works and tell us more details about DNA repair.
Well, as you know, DNA is the material that makes up our genes and chromosomes. It consists of what are called bases, adenine, guanine, cytosine, and thymine, A, G, C, and T, which form the genetic code. And DNA actually is a double helix. That's the famous discovery of Watson and Crick. And so DNA forms a double helix, but is subject to different kinds of stresses in the cell. And these can lead to DNA damage either from environmental stresses or endogenous factors. So I mentioned some of the environmental stresses earlier. DNA damage can occur in the cell also when there's problems during replication, such as stalling during the period of time when the DNA is being replicated so a cell can divide. That can lead to breaks in the DNA strand. There can also be errors when the DNA is being copied, into, if one chromosome is being copied into two. And those errors are similar to spelling errors on a computer, and you need a spell checker program to come in and find the mistakes and then correct them.
And what's the difference between DNA and RNA?
So DNA has the genetic blueprint that codes for RNA, which is expressed or transcribed from the DNA, and RNA can take many forms. The classical form is called messenger RNA, which conveys the message of the DNA into a protein. So the messenger RNA becomes translated from an RNA sequence into a polypeptide or protein sequence, and it is the proteins that form all the enzymes and structural components of our cells. It turns out there are many other types of RNAs that have been newly discovered. One of them is something called microRNAs, which was the subject of a Nobel Prize awarded recently, and these seem to have very fascinating regulatory roles in the cell.
What role does DNA repair play in cancer therapy?
So many of the agents that we use to treat cancer, such as radiation therapy, many chemotherapies we talked about, such as cisplatin, cyclophosphamide, and others, interact directly with the DNA and either form chemical changes in the DNA or actually break the DNA strands, which is what radiation can do. That's where DNA repair comes in. So one of the reasons that we're able to use these sorts of agents to treat cancer effectively is that cancer cells tend to be dividing more rapidly than our normal healthy cells. And as a result, they have less time to fix their DNA. They also tend to be a little more sloppy in terms of how they repair their DNA. Some of these pathways are abnormal. In fact, that's some of the area that we study in our own lab. This sloppiness leads to some increased susceptibility to agents that target the DNA. Also, cancer cells, in addition to dividing more rapidly, they have some abnormalities in some of the processes in the cell that slow down the cell division when DNA damage is sensed. These processes are sometimes referred to as checkpoints, where the cell has a process of checking the DNA to see if it's intact before the cell divides. A normal cell will halt cell division to give time for repair, but cancer cells often lack that checkpoint, and as a result will go on to divide with broken DNA. And again, the cancer therapy that targets the DNA takes advantage of that.
And so it sounds like typically normal tissues, skin, and other organs are better at repairing this damage than a tumor is, for example, and that gives us a therapeutic advantage in some cases.
Right. In some cases, there are subtle differences between the DNA repair capacity of cancer cells and normal healthy tissue that really come from a combination of the factors I talked about before, the lack of the checkpoints, the more rapid cell division, as well as some abnormalities in the repair pathways themselves.
Tell us a little bit about genetic instability. What is that in cancer?
So cancers not only are more rapidly dividing, but as I said, they're a little bit sloppier in terms of how they manage their DNA. They lack those checkpoints for regulating the speed of cell division. And as a result, they tend to incur many more mistakes and abnormalities in their DNA as they divide. And the genetic instability can be at the level of broken or missing chromosomes or too many chromosomes because the cell division doesn't occur properly, so the chromosomes don't segregate to the daughter cells properly. There can also be so-called point mutations where single base pairs, those A, G, C, and T letters are incorrect, but the cancer cell doesn't fix that properly. So there are many levels of genetic instability, and this is a key feature of cancer cells. It's obviously not a good thing for normal cells to have genetic instability, but cancer cells actually can benefit from the genetic instability because it creates genetic diversity in the cancer, and it sometimes allows the cancer cells to develop resistance to cancer therapy more quickly.
Explain for our listeners, Peter, what a mutation is. What does that mean?
Well, a mutation is a change in the sequence of the DNA. So I mentioned earlier that the DNA is made of beads on a string with the letters A, G, C, and T. And the Watson-Crick discovery showed that, in part, showed that A binds to T and G binds to C. And so the double helix has a sequence code. And that sequence code is used to read, is read during the transcription of DNA into RNA. A mutation is an alteration in that sequence code. So it could be a G in place of what should be an A. It could be a rearrangement where a piece of the DNA is flipped around backwards. It could be an insertion of, you know, a string of letters from just one up to hundreds. So any change in the sequence is a form of mutation.
And have some of these been well identified in cancer?
So it turns out that there are a number of key genes that researchers have found are mutated in cancer cells, and many people feel are linked to the causation of the cancer. One of the most famous is a gene called RAS, spelled R-A-S. Another one is called RAF, R-A-F. RAF is a link. RAF mutations in RAF are linked to melanoma. Mutations in RAS are linked to many types of cancers, including cancers of the pancreas, lung, and other sites. More recent discoveries have identified mutations in genes linked to familial breast and ovarian cancer, and those genes go by the name BRCA1 or BRCA2, and BRCA is lingo for BRCA1 or BRCA2 for breast cancer-associated gene. And individuals can inherit one of these genes with a pre-existing mutation that inactivates the function of the gene. And what people think happens is that the good copy of the gene is lost in a particular cell, and that creates an increased risk of that cell becoming malignant.
In certain mutations, do we have some medicines or drugs that might be more effective for a patient with that problem? I've heard some things regarding lung cancer mutations. A patient might have a certain mutation, and they might be more sensitive to a particular drug than a patient without that mutation.
That's right. So part of the elucidation of these mutations and these key genes has been understanding their function, how these mutations impact the function of the protein as well as the structure of the protein and how it behaves. And that has allowed people to design agents, small molecule drugs usually, sometimes antibodies that target those specific proteins or mutated proteins and take advantage of that. So, in fact, there's a gene called epidermal growth factor receptor gene, which encodes a protein that's on the surface of many cells, including cancer cells in the lung. And it turns out if an individual's cancer has a mutation in the EGF receptor gene, that cancer will be susceptible to a certain class of drugs. Another example that is somewhat related to research in our own lab is I mentioned the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes linked to breast cancer. Well, mutations in those genes actually impact the ability of the cancer cell to conduct DNA repair by a particular pathway. Those mutations give the cancer cell increased genetic instability and help turn it more malignant, but also create a little bit of an Achilles heel for the cancer with agents that exploit that deficiency in DNA repair. And there are a number of agents that are now in clinical trials to take advantage of that deficiency. There's some trials going on at Yale New Haven Hospital with those agents. And in our own lab, we're actually not only testing those agents themselves, but in combinations with other potential chemotherapy agents as well as radiation. And we've also been working to develop newer agents that may be even more selective or more potent.
We're going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more information about DNA repair with Dr. Peter Glaser.
The American Cancer Society estimates that in 2010, over 2,000 people will be diagnosed with colorectal cancer in Connecticut alone, and nearly 150,000 in the U.S. Early detection is the key, and when detected early, colorectal cancer is easily treated and highly curable. Men and women over the age of 50 should have regular colonoscopies to screen for the disease. Patients with colorectal cancer have more hope than ever before. Each day, more patients are surviving the disease due to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, like the one at Yale, to test innovative new treatments for colorectal cancer. New options include a Chinese herbal medicine being used in combination with chemotherapy to reduce side effects of treatment and help cancer drugs work more effectively. This has been a Medical Minute, and more information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Lynn Wilson. Today I'm joined by Dr. Peter Glaser, and we're discussing DNA repair. So, Peter, in the previous part of the show, you mentioned antibodies, monoclonal antibodies, small molecules. Define for us what these things are, what they mean, and how they work on the cell.
Well, antibodies are actually large protein molecules that our own bodies make as part of our immune defense mechanisms against infectious agents. Research almost 30 years ago found that antibodies could be raised in mice and the cells making them could be harvested such that the antibodies could be produced in a test tube and collected for use as a medicine. And the key there is that the mice are challenged with different proteins or antigens that might be related to factors that are important for the cancer cell to grow. So in this way, monoclonal antibodies are developed, and monoclonal simply means it comes from a single clone of a cell, of an antibody-producing cell. And I won't go into all the mechanics of doing that, but there are ways of isolating that cell and collecting the antibody for use as a medicine. And these are particularly promising types of cancer therapy agents. Some of the current ones that are being used in the clinic are Herceptin, which targets a protein on the surface of breast cancer cells. There's something that targets the several that target the epidermal growth factor receptor I mentioned before, which is on a protein on the surface of several types of cancer cells, including those in the lung and the colon, as well as cancers in the head and neck region. So many more antibodies are being developed as cancer therapeutics. Now, how they work is still being studied, but part of the way they work is interfering with the normal function of whatever protein they stick to by binding to it and sort of mucking it up. They may also help to elicit an immune response to the cell that they stick to. So a combination of those actions is important for the effectiveness of an antibody. Small molecules are simply a term used to broadly refer to, chemicals that are the more conventional types of medicines that we have. These can be synthesized in a chemistry laboratory by pharmaceutical companies and They're similar to many of the medicines that we take every day in pill form.
And why are they called small molecules? Is that because they need to get themselves inside of another cell, or?
Well, I think this is a little bit of the scientific jargon to differentiate what the molecules I just described from larger molecules like antibodies or things of that nature.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about what hypoxia is and how that can play a role in cancer therapy.
So one of the key features of tumors is that their growth outstrips their blood supply. And not so much that they don't grow, but to the point where the cancers actually don't, many regions of the cancer don't get the kind of blood flow that healthy parts of the body get. And as a result, they don't live in an area with the level of oxygen that is present in our healthy tissues. And so the lower oxygen levels in parts of tumors are referred to as regions of hypoxia, meaning low oxygen. Now, what happens is hypoxia, if it's extreme, will prevent the growth of the cells, but it usually doesn't get so extreme that the growth is completely blocked. It may be slowed. But hypoxia profoundly changes the biology of the cancer cell. One of the main things it does is stimulates the cancer cell to send signals to nearby blood vessels to grow and expand so that more blood vessels grow into the tumor. So the process of recruiting blood vessels into a tumor so that it can grow and expand and get bigger is called angiogenesis and is one of the fundamental discoveries of the last 20 or so years that has led to a lot of effort to develop medicines and strategies to interfere with angiogenesis. However, another thing that the low oxygen or hypoxia does is it changes the internal biology of the cancer cells. One aspect of that is it makes the cancer cells more dependent on the sugar called glucose for their energy source. And so that is the base, in part, the basis of why we use so-called PET scanning today to identify tumors that takes advantage of the high utilization of glucose in tumors. In addition, hypoxia affects the expression of many genes in the cancer, and so it changes the constellation of activities in the cancer cell, creating a situation where the cancer cell is somewhat different than healthy tissue. And that's an area that our lab and several labs at Yale are interested in exploiting for cancer therapy. One particular way that hypoxia leads to a difference in cancer cells is by altering the DNA repair capability of the cell. It turns out hypoxic stress causes the cancer cells to decrease their capacity to carry out DNA repair in certain ways, and our own research has discovered some of these steps, and now we're designing new medicines that might be used to exploit that.
How does hypoxia impact the efficacy of radiation treatment, for example?
Well, it turns out that radiation causes damage to tissue when the X-rays or photons pass through the tissue and knock electrons off of atoms in the tissue. That's a process called ionization. That process creates radicals, so-called ion radicals, that can then interact with other molecules in the cell, including DNA. In the presence of oxygen, there's additional radicals and other species are produced that are longer lived and can cause more damage throughout the cell. When there's no oxygen present, there's less damage that's produced to the DNA.
I see. So preferentially, we would not want to have hypoxic tumors if we want radiation to work as well as it can.
That's right. So hypoxia is a double-edged sword, maybe a triple or quadruple-edged sword, really, because it affects the cancer cell in many ways, some to make them more susceptible to therapy, but some to make them less susceptible.
I see. Let's shift gears for a minute, Peter. The NIH, the National Institutes of Health, is our governmental funding agency, and for our listeners, that process by which we can obtain grants for research funding is extremely competitive. There are lots of different kinds of grants. And recently, you were awarded what's called a program project grant, and you're the principal investigator of that program. Can you tell us the details about that and how important that is?
Well, so the program project grant is a type of a funding mechanism from the National Cancer Institute. Of the National Institutes of Health that is designed to support cancer-related research of a team at a particular institution, whereby investigators doing related work can get together and really develop an integrated, interactive research program that's highly focused on some aspect of cancer research. So it's a little bit different than a research grant awarded to an individual investigator, which would be, which is a very important and highly valuable thing. This is a way to bring together investigators in a focused way.
Tell us about the details. What sort of are there multiple projects within this program project grant?
Yes. Yeah, so there's four projects. Each is led by a project leader, not only myself, but three other faculty at Yale, Alan Sartorelli, Joanne Sweezy, and Patrick Sung. And these projects are focused in the area of DNA repair and with an ultimate goal of developing new cancer therapies. So my particular project is looking at how DNA repair is different in cancer cells and how that can be exploited for therapy. Joanne Sweezy is looking at the fact that some DNA repair genes are mutated in cancers and whether that cancers with specific mutations and specific DNA repair genes may be more or less susceptible to existing therapies. Patrick Sung is looking at some novel interactions among DNA repair factors in a cell and has discovered that there are some key interactions that could be the targets for novel therapies. And Alan Sartorelli continues a long track record of developing novel agents that can be used specifically to target cancer cells. He's a pharmacologist, and he's already synthesized a number of molecules that are in clinical trials. This program project is supporting his work in that area.
So obviously, important discoveries can't be made without this sort of support, Peter. What do you think have been some of the most important DNA repair discoveries, say, over the last 10 years?
So it's interesting that when I started in this field 20 years or so ago, DNA repair was thought to be just a housekeeping function of the cell and wasn't thought to be that important. Well, it turns out that, as I said, many DNA repair genes are associated with inherited cancers, such as the BRCA1 or BRCA2 genes. And so our understanding of that has now opened up the possibility of exploiting these DNA repair deficiencies in cancer.
Dr. Peter Glaser is Robert E. Hunter Professor of Therapeutic Radiology, Professor of Genetics, and Chair of the Department of Therapeutic Radiology at Yale School of Medicine. If you have questions or would like to share your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. I'm Bruce Barber, and you're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.